Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore positive. We're positively into a beautiful week of road baseball, OTA football, division baseball, actually. Luke Jones is going to join us now. We're getting this crab cake tour out. We're going to be at Cooper's North on Tuesday. We're going to be at State Fair on Thursday morning. The Orioles play 1 o'clock against the Blue Jays. We're doing a little brunch, which gives me a chance to check in with chicken and waffles. Maybe some shrimp and grits over at State Fair. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll have some Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. We gave some away at Fadley's last Friday when Luke and I got together and talked about walks. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, making our water clean, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi-Care for keeping us out on the road so we can do what we do. And I'm wearing my Costas shirt. We'll be there on the 20th. And the Orioles take on the Yankees then. And, you know, I was strategic about my June crab cake dates, like I'm going to be strategic about my September oyster dates. I know the Yankees and this problem of them winning every night. You can't do anything about that until you get there. This is where the team goes on the road and hopefully makes some hay. I'd say they've been a good home team. They've been a good road team. Division games gave one away on Sunday. And the general state of the team to me is they're still hitting the ball well. And the Mullins thing continues to be an issue, breaking bats and, like, you know, all sorts of things. But for the most part, pitching aside and where they're going to be with that, you got to love what you see with this team 2 out of 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, we've talked about that. I think that's what was so frustrating about this weekend, that you take 2 out of 3, but it felt disappointing because of the John Means news, because of the Tyler Wells news and what that could mean. Not so much right now, but just the depth and the upside and knowing that there's 4 months to go in a regular season. And then there's October after that. But on Sunday, I mean, the issue was they had 15 hits. I mean, that matched their career high, but they left 13 guys on base and certainly a missed opportunity there, to say the least. But since you mentioned them, I mean, the Cedric Mullins thing isn't getting any better. And yes, he made a sparkling play, robbed a potential home run. The defense you still really like, but I'm going to, and I've cited this kind of not inflection point, but just really speaks to where he was at the time and what he's been since then. I go back to mid-April when Mullins hit that walk-off home run against the Twins. Since then, Nestor, so we're talking over 100 plate appearances, which is, you know, it's a pretty sizable portion
and six
of
weeks, right? And six yeah. healthy weeks too, right?
Yeah, we're talking since April 19th. He's batting 139 with a 177 on base percentage and a 194 slugging percentage. I mean, he's hitting like a pitcher. I mean, this is the Jorge Mateo conversation from a year ago with what Cedric Mullins is doing at the plate or not doing at the plate right now. And, you know, we saw it in, you know, the seventh inning when he strikes out and slams the bat down in frustration, breaks the bat, throws his helmet down. It's tough because you're talking about someone who we've seen play at a high level. We've seen him be a 30-30 guy. Although I'll remind that was 3 years ago at this point in time, you know, that wasn't as recent as you'd like it to be. And we've seen him, you know, we've seen his numbers decline since then. Now, last year, I think there was an overwhelming sentiment and hope that it was stemming from the injuries. Keep in mind, he had multiple groin issues that he dealt with, you know, starting on, what was it, Memorial Day last year, and then had the setback right after the All-Star break and landed on the IL again. And I think most people, and including myself, thought that it was much more about that and that him being healthy would change things in 24. But I mean, this is a real problem. And I think you look at the outfield in its totality. Obviously, we've talked a lot about Austin Hayes. In fairness to Austin Hayes, and I'm not saying that he's been great since he's returned, but since he's returned, and, you know, it's only 36, 34 at bats, whatever it is, because he's not playing every day. You know, he's become their fourth outfielder. He's batting 294 since then and not hitting for a ton of power or anything like that, but he's been better since he's returned from the IL. To me, he's played like a, you know, fourth outfielder. And I mean that in a complimentary way, as far as since he's returned. You know, it doesn't mean I want to start playing him every day again, but that's looked better. But you kind of look at the rest of the outfield. We've talked about it. Santander, you know, big day Saturday aside, you know, hits the home run on his bobblehead day, all that. He hasn't been the best version of himself. Colton Cowser has fallen off, and he hasn't been as great since his amazing April, although drawing walks certainly has helped his on-base percentage and his overall profile. You know, the guy that I'd like to see play more regularly is Kyle Stowers. But that doesn't mean I'm convinced that Kyle Stowers is going to be the answer either. So, you know, it really, I mean, Mullins is by far their biggest problem right now in the outfield. I think that's evident. And part of that is you want to try to keep his defense in there, but I mean, the bat has been so bad now for, you know, 7 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, that it's becoming more and more of a problem. And I think you saw it again in that seventh inning, which, by the way, I would have pinch hit for him in that spot. You know, that was a spot where, you know, there were a couple guys on and you had an opportunity to increase your lead. I understand the thinking that it's a one run game and you'd like to keep his defense out there, you know, for the final two innings, but I would have pinch hit for him there. Strikes out. You see the frustration, you know, look, he's not hiding from it. He talked after the game on Sunday and he flat out said, it's been tough. You know, I've got to be better. I'm trying to work. I'm working every day. I see him out there when I get to the ballpark at 2:30 in the afternoon, Nestor. He's taking extra BP. He's doing things to try to get better and to try to get out of this, but it's just not happening. And again, it's not quite as simple as just saying, oh, well, bench him or, oh, send him down to Norfolk. And I'm not saying that those things aren't going to eventually happen, but as I said, you kind of just need more consistency from your outfield in general, because, you know, we've talked about it with Hayes. You know, like I said, Cowser in the month of May, go look at the numbers.
It hasn't been consistent. It's been hot and cold, yeah. Right?
It really has been.
Yeah. When you have guys like Mountcastle and other places that you already know are hot and cold, I mean, that's the one thing about Rutschman and Henry. I mean, every time they come up, you feel like they can at least hit a double down the line and they're at least going to have a disciplined, strategic approach at the plate. And you see how exceptional they are, especially when we've sat here and dealt with a lot of lousy for a long time and some pretty good. And, you know, when you mentioned Mullins sort of losing it, whatever it is, I mean, the Chris Davis thing, right? I mean, you know, on the heels of seeing how precipitous a fall can be for any ball player. I mean, I guess there's cases everywhere. I think of Chris Davis more than anyone else around here, because not just because of the money or whatever, and the diagnosis involved in all of that and what was going to be legal and what was not going to be legal in regard to attention. And I think about players on that arc of, well, when they're 25, 26, they'll come into being really good. When they're 30, if they have that skill set, they'll probably still have it. At 32, it starts to move in the other direction. And in the modern era, that's when guys start making more money, which makes it even harder if you're less ask Adam Jones. You have to go play in Japan. They don't have any place for you anymore if you're just pretty good or really good, but you're 32 or 33 or 34. So I don't know where that arc is for all these guys. And it used to be a whole thing, and this is where I'll point out once again that I am Hispanic and Venezuelan, that my people would come over and fake birth certificates. Happen all the time, and you never knew how old anybody was. I don't know that that's going on so much in, you know, York, Pennsylvania these days, but in a general sense, there's an aging process for all of this where 3 years is a long, long time, and it's kind of sad for him and for Hayes. Like, you're already with Hayes, you're like, nah, dude, he's a fourth outfielder, and I'm like, he was an all-star last year. You can't find space. You can't get the confidence level that he's going to hit 294 the rest of the way. I don't know, but we get expiration labels like milk cartons on some of these guys, and then some guys just fall off so crazy, and I bring up Chris Davis, that it's kind of jaw-dropping, and you really can't put your finger on it.
Yeah. And look, we talked about this at Fadley's, but offense is down around baseball. And I'm glad you kind of mentioned this because this is, you know, I don't want to segue entirely off of the outfield, but look at the Rays, for example. I mean, you have a team that all of their pitching injuries last year, they endured that. Why? Because go look at their offense and the number of guys that they had enjoy career seasons at the plate. And then look what it's looked like this year, where they're still feeling the effects. And obviously they traded Glasnow in the offseason. And, you know, the Rays did the things that the Rays do, which is typically trading off a player or two and then relying more on your system and all that. But look at someone like Randy Arozarena. I mean, think about where he was a few years ago and the player that he's been the last few years. And, you know, I'm not saying best player in the game or a top five player or a top 10 player, but clearly a player who has had some cachet and has, you know, looked the part of an all-star kind of player. Go look at his numbers right now. I mean, at the end of the day on Sunday, batting 162, he's got a 263 on base percentage. And most shocking, he's slugging 310. I mean, he's been Cedric Mullins for them. I mean, Randy Arozarena, a guy that I think if you ask most people who's the better player, Randy Arozarena or Cedric Mullins before the season, I think most people would have said Arozarena. So this is happening around baseball, and we've talked about it a lot with the offense. I mean, I brought up the example to you not long ago, looking at the contrast between Gunnar Henderson, Rookie of the Year, going into his second full season and now becoming an MVP candidate. And in the National League, the contrast, Corbin Carroll, who looked like he was going to be one of the stars of the National League, was Rookie of the Year. You know, saw him in the postseason. The Diamondbacks had their Cinderella run to the World Series. He's been awful this year. So everything you said as far as kind of the natural progression and then the fall for a ball player whenever they reach their prime and then they're no longer that player and they start to decline, you know, we tend to think about it through looking through the lens of a player who plays a decade or 15 years, but we also know a lot of players, it's a much, much shorter. You know, you can find some players who are decent in their mid 20s and hang around as it might be as a backup player, but then they're done by age 28. They're out of baseball, or they're playing in the minor leagues, or they're playing in Japan, or whatever it is, to your point. So, you know, there is a lot of that going on. And I don't say that to be flippant or dismissive about what's happening with the Orioles outfield right now, and specifically with Mullins. And, you know, Hayes, the overall numbers still obviously are what they are, which is really bad.
By the way, it's Major League Baseball. There's no job for life. We know that,
no,
right?
No.
You know,
right.
Ken Singleton came on the show 2 weeks ago. You know, his time came and went too, right, in the outfield. And, you know, for any of these positions and when you factor in how much money they make and who's coming up the pipeline, I'll just say this, and I was going to Google – hey, you know him off the top of your head. Mullins, what were his lines last year? Those two guys, whatever their final stats were last year, 256, 268, you know, 20 home runs, 18, 12 home runs, whatever it was, there was no reason when you and I were driving around Sarasota and I was doing some great hot yoga while it was raining down there and they were figuring out Jackson Holliday, there was no thought that Hayes and Mullins would be leapfrogged by Kowser, who was a question mark, Kerstedt, who doesn't have a glove, Sowers, who couldn't figure it out last year, if these guys just hit for par, right? Like, just for eight weeks, the first 8 weeks, if they were healthy and just hit 260, 270, 280, got on base a little bit, played their defense, played their game, wouldn't need to be all-starish, hit 320, have 15 home runs. They wouldn't need to do that. That they would have been blocking a lot of these other guys anyway. But I think that's what I expected of them. I didn't expect them to absolutely regress. I didn't expect the worst version of a healthy Mullins. I don't think Mike Elias did either. But from an organizational standpoint, they had guys ready to go. And that's why they're, I would say, in first place. I keep wanting to say that because it feels that way, because they win 8 times out of 10. They should be in first place. Damn Yankees. We'll get to them in a couple weeks at Acostas, but I would just say from where I sit, this is a little bit shocking, but they can figure it out. I thought their problem 5-6 weeks ago was going to be six major league outfielders. And now we're, much like the pitching staff, struggling to figure out, okay, who are the four we're really going to use here and why, and what, and Santander's money and trading deadline and who has value. None of them have much value on a trade, like, right? Santander, Hayes, or Mullins, to trade them in a deal that gets you a reliever, that's Rex Barney talk right now, right?
Basically, I mean, and I'll say this, I'll disagree with you a little bit in terms of, because you made mention as far as Sarasota, and let me be clear. When I say that, that doesn't mean that I thought Cedric Mullins was going to be this bad, or that I thought Austin Hayes was going to be this bad. But there were the warning signs in terms of the last couple years, Hayes in the second half of the season really dropping off. And obviously with Mullins, for me, it was just a question of his health and was he going to be able to stay healthy? Now, do I think that that was going to equate Austin Hayes hitting 190 with like a 480 OPS at this point in the season and Cedric Mullins hitting 181? No, absolutely not. I
So
thought there
Mullins
was a
hit
scenario,
233
and
last
I,
year,
you know.
and Hayes hit 275. Just I don't make numbers up, but because they are important numbers, but I thought Mullins would do better than that and be healthier than that, right?
Of course, and I did too. Let me be very clear about it. But there were warning signs in terms of, you know, like I said, Hayes, go look at his splits first half, second half the last 2 years. I mean, he was an all-star last year. Go look at the second half numbers. So that for me though was more of my argument for those guys not having a vision that they're going to play 155 games. That to me was more of justification of rolling Colton Cowser into the picture, and now you have four outfielders who are playing 120 to 130 games, and you know you can kind of rotate and you use the DH spot a little bit for Santander, and so that was more my vision. That was not me saying that I thought Cedric Mullins was going to be this bad, or I thought Austin Hayes was going to be this bad. But part of this is also like, hey, Colton Cowser's got to make adjustments. You know, we've seen him, you know, really hit the fastball and do what he did in April, and that was amazing. And he draws walks to his credit, so that's allowed him to keep his production at a certain level. But you know, now he's seen a lot of breaking stuff and all that. You know, he's got to adjust. I mean, that's the name of the game, and I think he will. Let me be clear about that. But when you have that, and we mentioned Santander, I mean, we haven't talked nearly as much about him. He's hitting 217. You know, he has a 730-ish OPS. I mean, that's not great for him. That's certainly not what he envisioned in a contract year, whether it's going to be signing something with the Orioles or departing and going elsewhere and trying to make a little bit of money as a free agent for the first time.
Well, with these
You know,
numbers, you don't want him back next year.
well, right. I mean, that's part of
If
it.
he's hitting
So,
this in August, that's not good. But like
yeah.
for all of these problems, again, I always think you and I driving around Sarasota, dreaming the big dream 5 days before opening day. What are they going to be? Who's coming north on the roster? Because that's so important because it changes every minute of every day as these arms fall off. We did a whole hour on arms falling
Yeah.
off today. All of this crap that's gone wrong for them. If I would have told you that Mullins would be not Mendoza, but batting like a pitcher, if I would have told you Hayes would have been banged up and not very productive from a slugging, from what you really expect out of him or need out of all-star productivity out of him, and guys' arms are falling off, and Kramer's hurt, and Batista's unavailable, and Kimbrel's been so-so. If I would have told you all of that, you wouldn't say, I bet they're playing 700 ball. You know what I mean? There's a lot that's gone right here, and that's masked a lot of the problems that they've had because Mullins and Hayes and Santander are a problem, and they were the starting outfield when we were driving around Sarasota.
Well, but again, this also goes back to what I've been saying. Offense is down around baseball. I mean, even, and I've talked about this. Yes, their offense wasn't as good in May as it was in April, but go look at the numbers. They're still among the very top. You know, Cleveland and the Yankees have been the other teams where you're looking at the AL and runs scored per game. The Orioles are right up there. But in saying that, the Yankees, who have been slightly better than the Orioles, right? I mean, they've been leading their first place, three games up at the end of this weekend and all that. Go look at the bottom of their lineup. They've got three or four guys at the bottom of their order that are not hitting, right? I mean, every team around the league seemingly has some of that. So I'm with you just in the general statement that you made. But again, it speaks to how great Gunnar Henderson has been, how great Adley Rutschman has been, how great Jordan Westberg has been. I mean, Westberg's the guy that you really point to and say, okay, he didn't just take a step forward. He took a couple steps forward, and he's become not an above average player, but he's been an all-star caliber third baseman. I mean, is he going to make it? Probably not, just knowing how that kind of stuff works in terms of picking reserves and everything, and assuming he's not going to be voted in by the fans, but he's been that kind of player. So when you have those three guys, hey, Mountcastle's had a really good year overall, even though, you know, he's streaky. We know that about him. You know, Jorge Mateo, who hopefully, you know, he gets hit in the back of the head with the bat, just a freak thing that happened. You know, feel bad for Mullins, feel bad for him. You know, he was in the concussion protocol. We'll see if he goes on the IL for a span here. But Mateo, we've talked about him. I've talked about him a lot. And I was the first guy saying last August, why is he still on the team? He's been really good for them in the sense of back in March, if you looked at, if someone told you back in March what the primary second baseman's numbers would be for the Orioles, you would have looked at those numbers blind and said, hey, Jackson Holliday's off to a good start in his major league career. Mateo's been a saving grace there that position didn't become an albatross for them because he's been, you know, really solid. Not spectacular, but really, really solid. And he's given them plus production at second base. When, you know, Holliday gets sent down, you don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, Ramon Urias hasn't hit the ball this year. We know he's really struggled offensively as well. So that had the potential to be a problem, but he stepped up. So, you know, Ryan O'Hearn, who, you know, didn't play Sunday, but we know what he's done overall. So they've had their guys that are having really good seasons, but the guys who aren't, boy, it's really been a struggle. But I would challenge and say that you're seeing a lot of that around baseball. You're seeing a lot of good established players who you would not at all think, oh, well, you know, this guy's 35, he's washed up. You know, yeah, you have some of that around baseball, but you also have some 20 somethings and early 30 somethings who you wouldn't necessarily think are struggling, but that's just kind of been the run scoring environment we're seeing in across baseball. So that's not to make an excuse.
And this is after the shift, right? Like, you know what I mean? The shift was brought on to kind of, you know, open the game up for hitters and stuff. And I, you know, that hasn't happened in some cases.
I mean, what we're seeing is for the most part, last I saw, so don't quote me on this as being gospel, but last I've seen, walks and strikeouts have kind of leveled off at least. Like, remember, we had that trend where strikeouts just kept going up. That appears to have normalized, I guess, for lack of a better term. But I talked about this when we were discussing the walks, you know, last week. The power numbers across baseball have gone down. That's why what the Orioles have been able to do with their slugging, and when you have Gunner slugging 590, when you have Adley Rutschman, who's been slugging around 475, Mountcastle slugging around 500, Westberg slugging 500 plus, O'Hearn slugged, I think 450, I think it is. You're not seeing teams that have that many guys that are slugging at that level. So even if the batting average or the on-base percentage for certain teams doesn't look that bad, you're not seeing as much power potential. And we talked about it, the idea of stringing together multiple singles and trying to play small ball and doing things like that, it's tricky. I mean, it kind of came to fruition on Sunday for the Orioles. They had 15 hits, but I think they only had two extra base hits in that game. You know, Henderson had the leadoff home run. Austin Hayes had the double later in the game, and that was it. The rest were singles. I'm not absolving them. Let's be very clear about that. They had their opportunities in that game and they squandered it, but you see a lot of that around baseball. That's why teams philosophically have said, we want the big inning. We're going to swing for the fences. We're swinging for power. And we're going to do that because it's, you know, with the velocity and the spin and all that different stuff, philosophically, that's what they're trying to do. That's their approach. So I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying that that's a better brand of baseball than the past or anything like that. I'm just trying to illustrate what it is right now. And you know, there's a lot of that around baseball. So, yeah, the Orioles outfield, it's been surprising. And even if you were a believer in Colton Cowser becoming starting player this year, even if you were a believer in Kyle Stowers finally getting another shot at it, or Heston Kerstad coming up and getting a shot at it, even if you thought some of those things were likely and possible to happen this year, no one thought Cedric Mullins would be, you know, a sub 550 OPS hitter this year, which is just awful. You know, it's a nightmare for him. And, you know, Santander, who hasn't been as bad as the other two, but this is not the contract year he was envisioning so far. You know, the power numbers, you know, home run numbers are okay, but, you know, hitting 215 and a sub 300 on base percentage, I mean, that's not what he had in mind. So it's a long season. Let's be clear about that. And Jorge Mateo, I'll continue to prop him up as the example of why you don't give up on these guys, because Mateo, myself included, everyone for 3 months last summer was clamoring for him to be DFA'd. And, you know, the thought was, oh, you know, maybe he'll get claimed or you're outright him the Norfolk. But, you know, you can't keep running this guy out there. But, you know, he's been better this year. There's still the optimism of getting these guys straightened out. They do have track records. Mike Elias was asked about this point blank. How concerned are you about your outfielders on Friday? And he said, you know, yeah, it's been a struggle for those guys, but we're probably, in all honesty, less concerned than the fans are right now, or the media is right now, because we have guys with the track record. Now, he's going, obviously, he's going to say that publicly as well. He's not going to throw them under the bus. You're confident in guys until you ship them off, and you're not confident anymore.
Dude, there's a pathway. If Mullins is healthy, to go down to Norfolk and hit the cover off the ball and come back up here in August, because Calvin has a hamstring pull. Like, I mean, I've just seen this, and that's what I always laugh when I mention Sarasota. The depth of all of this isn't 24, 26, 28. It's 42, 40. 45 if you're going to win a World Series, that you're going to be counting on every Ramon Urias. You're going to be counting on three guys that aren't even on this team. Hey, can we deal for Clevinger? I'm just trying to get guys in a bullpen. I'm thinking out loud. Tampa loves giving their pitchers away. Let's do a three-way trade and sneak up on them, like with the Reds or something, where we really get the pitcher and don't tell them that they're dealing in the division. I don't know. Is that legal?
Yeah. But I mean, but your point's well taken. I mean, look, it's a long season. And for as much as there was hand-wringing about Craig Kimbrel, look at what Kimbrel's done his last seven or eight appearances. And look, he's going to have another stretch where it looks ugly, because that's kind of just been who he's been for the last 6 years. You know, I've been saying that over and over. That doesn't
like
mean
saying Mountcastle's going to hit .150 for a week. Pick one, because he absolutely is.
Yeah, we see that. I mean, we do. And as long as you have the sufficient guys to pick up the slack, that's why I said, yeah, I still do want to see them add a couple bullpen arms, because they need it. And Sunday was an example of that. Their bullpen was short a couple guys. Dylan Tate didn't get the job done, right? He's someone that I'm not writing him off as a guy that is a solid middle reliever, but is he someone you trust in the eighth inning? I would say no. So, but your point as far as a 40-man roster and needing contributions, Jacob Webb's been a great example of this. You know, Jacob Webb, when Kimbrel was at his worst, Jacob Webb pitched some really big games for them and had some really big outings for them. Is Jacob Webb going to be that for the next 4 months? History would suggest probably not, but you need those contributions. And as much as we use the cliche of the Orioles magic lyrics and every night it's a different star, you do need some of that. You need that over the course of a full season. You're going to have guys on your roster at some point who probably won't even be with the organization anymore come September. And I say that for every team that has any visions of doing anything meaningful, you have some of that. You know, you can go back last year and find some guys that were no longer, you know, either in the majors or even in the organization that helped them in April and May and June at some point in time. You see that. So, you know, in Orioles history, you think of John Staffaro and Dave Chrishone and different guys like that who may have only had one moment. Taylor Teagarden in the Buck era hit a walk-off home run. Barely did anything else at all in his Orioles time with the Orioles.
Tito Landrum, come on.
Yeah. So you have some of that. And, you know, I think that's why the beauty of baseball. And, you know, I mean, you can have it in other sports. I mean, look at what Tylan Wallace did with the punt return against the Rams last year. You know, Tylan Wallace, who – you know, has never lived up to being a fourth round receiver as an actual wide receiver contributor.
Anthony Mitchell.
But yeah, exactly. So, you know, you have that, but to bring it back to what we were talking about with the outfielders and what's going to happen there, Nestor, I don't think anyone right now can predict what their outfield's going to look like come August and September. I feel most confident about Kowser being in that picture. I still feel confident Santander is going to be in that picture, but Mullins and Hayes right now? I have no idea, especially when you have Kyle Stowers and Heston Kerstad factoring in there potentially some way. So, you know, we're going to see how it plays out. I mean, the good thing is they do have some of these other options, and I'll continue to say it. I'd really like to see Kyle Stowers play regularly, at least for the next couple of weeks, and see what you have. Is it more fourth outfielder, fifth outfielder type, or is it more, hey, this guy looks like he can play every day? You know, because Mullins and Hayes have not proven this year that they should be playing every day. I mean, it's just that simple right now. So I'm not burying any of these guys on the bench and in the corner of the dugout and that they're going to sit indefinitely. But Mullins, frankly, needs to be sitting more. You know, we'll see about Hayes. I mean, he had a nice day on Sunday, you know, swung the bat pretty well, had a couple hits. That was good to see. But, you know, I don't know what this is going to look like. But when you have Gunnar Henderson, you have Adley Rutschman, you have Jordan Westberg, Mountcastle, O'Hearn, you know, they've had enough guys, Mateo, until this concussion issue. They've had enough guys that have been able to pick up the slack. And again, in 2024, with the run scoring environment we're seeing across baseball, that still equates to the Orioles overall having a plus offense. But yeah, you got to find a way to get at least a couple more of these guys going, because, you know, they've had some significant stretches here where they're getting very, very little from their outfield and they're making it work. Hey, 105 win pace. I'll continue to say that. Let's be clear, despite our overall tone in this conversation, things are still going really well overall, but you know, you want to try to come up with some answers here, some solutions here, because of what you're dealing with on the pitching side and bullpen, and are you going to have enough starters? So, you know, we're going to see how it plays out, but yeah, to think that Cedric Mullins would be hitting 180 in June, to think Austin Hayes will be hitting 190 in June. Yeah, it's a testament to everything else that's gone well to cover up some of the issues that they've had in the outfield that have been pretty evident.
All right, before we get to football, last thing on baseball, because you always say to me, I'm glad you brought that up. Well, I'm glad you brought up this guy should be sitting, this guy should be playing. Where are you on Brandon Hyde, you know, in regard to the amount of talent that they've had awful a couple of years ago, guys that he's got heart into that he thinks are pile divers, which is basically every guy you just trashed and said they're not good enough to play right now, or they're getting older, we have younger players coming in, that his heart was into Trey Mancini, right? Like all of that on a day-by-day basis. And again, I don't have a press credential, and that will be addressed mm-hmm. loudly at the appropriate time, at the time of my choosing. So I can't ask anybody, and I read Moneyball. Yeah, watch Moneyball. How much of this is Elias, pushing buttons on who pitches in the seventh and eighth and who pinch hits and whether they let Urias go up there and struggle with the bases loaded? Or to your point, I would have pinch hit for Mullins, right? Like, I don't know in the modern era. I'm not a real media member anymore, so I can't even ask. I really don't know where that comes from. And this is me asking you the question, fanboy Nestor asking Luke reporter guy, in your opinion, you don't criticize Hyde much. I mean, he gets crushed on Twitter like every manager, whatever. We don't. Yeah. I would let the whistling guy know we don't crush managers, or we don't do that ish around here. We speak credibly about this, but just on the, we don't talk about Hyde much, and we don't talk about movements and what reliever, and I don't sit here in massive criticism, and Lord knows, you know, Brett Hollander will never critic, you know what I mean? Like, you're never going to get that during the broadcast. Maybe Palmer could be a little flippant about it. Maybe McDonald, if you listen, and I've known Ben 30 years, that you could hear his, well, there are options out there. You know, I can hear him saying that, but we don't beat up on the manager here, and the team's really good, and I don't really want to be. I'm just wondering what you think of Brandon Hyde because sometimes I see really bad at bats and I'm thinking you got to have a better option there, and that does speak to a lot of arms, a few bats, limited resources, but this is a pretty movable team, and when Mateo gets hit in the head late in the game and you start losing guys and you're like, well, Urias, who's going to play the infield, who's going to play the outfield? I don't know. You don't have a lot of options in modern baseball. It felt like, you know, Earl Weaver had a couple of Terry Crowleys and Merv Rettmans and Jim Dwyers hanging around, that Benny Ayala's, that baseball isn't built that way anymore.
No, it's not. I mean, at this point in time, you have 13-man pitching staffs. It's very rare when teams go with 12 pitchers at this point in time. And I mean, I can even remember, and you know, you always make fun of me for being younger. I mean, you know, in the 90s when you started to have—
Not nearly as much as you make fun of me being older.
No, but I just mean, like, you know, it used to be considered crazy when they started going to 6-man bullpens, you know, and now you've got 8 in there on a regular basis. So,
well, they changed the rules because it was getting so specialized, right?
Absolutely.
This is like telling defensive coordinators, Rex, you figured this defense out too well. We're not letting you sub anymore on second down. There's no more subbing.
So there's some of that. And look, when you're talking about lineup construction, when you're talking about handling of pitchers, you know, in terms of, well, why is this guy, you know, why do so few of their pitchers, you know, go over 100 pitches and, you know, don't pitch deeper into games, and how they're managing the bullpen? A lot of that is collaborative. You know, it very much is collaborative, and they're very tight-lipped about their process for competitive reasons. It's become way more like the NFL in that way. So look, are there times where Brandon Hyde pulls a starter, and I think, you know, I would have tried to squeeze a couple more outs there. You know, as bottom of the order, your bullpen's been worked a lot of late. You know, are there times where I think that? Sure. Are there times where, you know, I think he's a little too matchup oriented in terms of righty, righty, lefty, lefty? Yeah, because sometimes, you know, I mentioned in a previous segment, might have been this discussion, or might have been a previous one, I was talking about Dylan Tate on Sunday, and it felt like he really gave Tate a longer than normal leash in that situation, especially having Danny Coulomb throwing and ready to go. Coulomb hadn't pitched the previous day. Tate had. Cano was down that day. Webb was down that day. So Sunday in isolation, for me, felt like it was not one of Brandon Hyde's better days. But I think so much of it is collaborative now. There is so much data that goes into it. You know, you have programs that will spit out lineups now in terms of trying to optimize it from a run scoring standpoint, in terms of the pitcher you're facing and order, you know, sequencing, all that stuff that goes into it. That
it's almost like Stratomatic, only better.
Right. And I don't say this to mean that Brandon Hyde doesn't have any accountability in those spots, but I don't know when I see fan angst or anger directed towards him for some of those decisions, I don't know how much of that, you know, what percentage of that is Brandon Hyde, what percentage of that is their analytics department, Elias, Sigmeidel. You know, again, I mean, there are a lot of cooks, and this has worked really well, mind you, right? I mean, you're talking about a team that's on pace to win 100 game, under 100 plus games for the second straight year, which, you know, you got to go back to the glory days of the late 60s and 70s talking about that for the Orioles. So, you know, overall, I like Brandon Hyde. Do I think he's perfect? Do I think he's a perfect tactician? No. But every manager over the course of 162, you're going to have bullpen decisions and pinch hitting decisions that you like or don't like. I think with the outfield, to bring it back to the outfield discussion, because I think that's so relevant right now, I think he's in a really difficult spot from a standpoint of wanting to try to balance production and winning on that given night with also not being in a position where you just are burying Cedric Mullins, burying Austin Hayes, and just saying, okay, you guys are bad right now. Well, you're going to stay bad because I'm not going to play you anymore. You know, I think he's trying to find that sweet spot in terms of winning that night's game and also trying to get some of your veteran players going, while at the same time, hey, Kyle Stowers has done a nice job with some of his opportunities here, and you want to try to get him more involved. As I said, I'd like to see Stowers play more. Point blank, I'd like to see him play more at this point in time. So I'll criticize Brandon Hyde for that. But at the same time, I understand you have these guys who have a track record. To your point, they're not 34 years old. So, you know, hypothetically, they shouldn't be finished or washed up or anything like that. So you're trying to balance all that. I think it's very easy to be sitting behind a microphone like you or me, or someone that's sitting in the upper deck or somebody who's watching it on TV to just say, oh, I do that. I wouldn't do that. That was a bad decision. I would have played that guy. I would have pitched that guy in that spot. I think all of those, which, hey, I'm not discouraging that. That's what makes baseball fun. Baseball, the slower pace of it lends itself to those debates and those decisions and those examples of second guessing or first guessing, quite frankly. But I think when you have the collection of players, the collection of talent that they have, that I still, you know, this is a very talented club, even with the guys that are struggling, they're former all-stars, to your point, and talking about Hayes and Mullins, you know, you're trying to figure out and balance winning that night's game, but also understanding that there's a big picture at work here. And just because someone's really bad right now doesn't mean that they're going to continue to be if you can try to figure out how to get them going. So I think he's trying to manage that a lot right now. Is he doing it perfectly? No. Like I said, I'd like to see Stowers play more. And, you know, I mean, so, but there are only 9 spots in a lineup on a daily basis. And pitchers are dropping left and right around baseball. And the Orioles have not been immune to that with some of the injuries they've had already. You're trying to keep guys healthy. So, yeah, you want to win that night's game really bad, especially with the way the Yankees are playing. At the same time, it would be malpractice to neglect the view of the big picture and understand that there is a long-term outlook that's at work here. So, you know, that's a long-winded answer of saying overall, yeah, I'm a Brandon Hyde guy. Do I think he's perfect? No, but I think the state of the bullpen, we've talked about it. They need a couple upgrades at some point between now and the deadline. I'll continue to say
it has
that.
Nothing to do with the manager. It has to do with the, as Bill Parcells would say, what the ingredients are, you know, on the menu in the seventh inning. Who do I have available when Bradish isn't going to make it out of the fourth?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And they won Saturday's game, but I think Bradish not making it out of the early innings on Saturday, I think that was a big reason why they lost Sunday's game, because he had to manage his bullpen differently. And again, he could have done some things differently. I didn't think Sunday was a great day for Brandon Hyde. I'll flat out say that. But overall, I think the results speak for themselves. And I think you see the way his team plays for him. It is rare when this team has a day where you say, man, they really appeared to go through the motions, or they didn't put forth good effort. And that was something we even said about him, their teams 4 or 5 years ago. As much as they were bad, it was rare when you said, man, the effort looked like it stunk today. Those guys played hard back in 2019, in my opinion. They just weren't good. Like, they were just bad players. But they played hard. The effort level was typically there.
Rio Ruiz tried always. Yeah.
And that was just to, you know, Hanser Alberto, you know, give you another reference there. So, to me, that was a good reflection on Brandon Hyde at that point in time. 5 years later, you know, I am way more happy than not with Brandon Hyde on a nightly basis, I think. And look, some people disagree with that, and that's fine. You know, we can have that discourse. But I think looking at the state of the bullpen, looking at their rotation now, knowing that John Means is not coming back through that door, Tyler Wells is not coming back through that door for the rotation or the bullpen, and knowing now you've got Albert Suarez on the back end of the rotation, which, hey, he's done a pretty nice job for them.
And this is when they're going to go to Norfolk too, right?
Well, yeah, no doubt. We're going to see Cade Povich at some point. We're going to see Chase McDermott at some point, most likely. I think with having lost Means now, there's probably more a greater likelihood that they're going to add a starting pitcher. Now, I don't think that's necessarily going to be a number one, number two, number three starter. It might be a guy to fill out the back end of your rotation for the last 2 months of the season. Dare I say, someone like Kyle Gibson, quite frankly. I'm not saying him individually, although he could end up being available given where the Cardinals are. But, you know, they might need that. They might need to go out and get that now, considering their starting pitching has taken some depth hits here with the events of the last few days. So, you know, Brandon Hyde's trying to manage all that. And it's way easier to sit back and watch that from a distance and say, hey, that wasn't the move to make there. I would have made that move. And sometimes that's fair. And sometimes that's right. You know, Brandon Hyde doesn't bat 1,000, but I think overall, given the state of the roster where they are, you know, I'm still going to give him a thumbs up in what he does more often than not. And, you know, you can't pitch the same bullpen guys every single night. And as much as you're trying to maximize your lineup, you're also dealing with human beings and you're trying to manage some guys who are bad right now, but haven't been bad in the past and have been good in the past. And you're trying to,
well, there would never be a time you'd want McCann or Urias to bat like in any situation,
well, and,
right?
Right. Like, and specifically to your point at talking about Urias on Sunday, I mean, Mateo was out of the game, you know, and look, I mean, Urias got hit by a pitch. I mean, got hit on the foot. And for a second there, you're wondering, oh no, does he have to leave the game and who's going to play in the infield in the ninth inning? So, you know, you're dealing with some of that. I mean, it's part of the game, but it's a whole pie of different variables that you're trying to deal with on a daily and a weekly basis. And I don't say that to make an excuse. Like I said, Sunday was not one of Brandon Hyde's finer days in terms of a couple decisions there that I would have probably handled differently. But I think he gets more right than not. And I think the results speak for themselves. Yeah. Not that a manager is the end all be all, but, and they have a lot of talent, but if he was truly as incompetent as I see some of his harsher critics say, then I don't think the Orioles would be quite as successful as they are. And I just, you know, that's just my opinion. I think Brandon Hyde's a really good manager. Is he the best in baseball? I have no idea. You know, probably
that's
not.
Why we don't take phone calls around here anymore, because I could not sit here and take fire Brandon Hyde phone calls. I mean,
we could second
just
guess
beating him up all day after a pinch hitter doesn't, you know, has a crappy at bat when, to your point, the options are limited and the results kind of speak for themselves last year and this year, right? So, you know, that's what we jump on. It's a really good team. They're good. They're going to have problems, but we don't pick on the manager here much because it feels not autopilot, but it feels like they put a lot more, they put it into the AI machine, you know?
Yeah. And again, I disagree with some of his decisions. You know, that's okay. Look, people disagreed with Earl Weaver. People disagreed with Casey Stengel. I mean, name
I want to make,
great
make clear here before
about.
We break that I disagree with Buck Showalter's decision to leave Zach Britton on the bench in Toronto.
I'm just letting you know.
And I still disagree with Cito Gaston's decision to let Mike Messina rot in the bullpen in 90.
Amen.
But other than that, those are the only times.
those are the only ones, right.
Maybe Mitch Williams wasn't the right guy for Joe Carter in 93. You know, maybe that wasn't the right matchup there.
You know what? You mentioned this. I have to bring this up since we're on this topic. So it was, last weekend when the Orioles had the blowout victory on last Sunday? Who were they even playing? I've lost
White
my
Sox.
Anyway.
That was the no-hitter day.
Oh, no. So it wasn't that. It was prior to that then. I guess it was. Anyway, the Orioles were winning. They were winning big. They brought in the new guy. It was
Vieira?
The guy from Milwaukee. He's Vieira, exactly. Yeah, Thiago Vieira. And that was when he walked three guys, gave up the three-run triple, walked another guy or hit a guy, whatever it was. And that was the spot that I had someone on Twitter say to me, man, Brandon Hyde goes through so many pitchers, even in a blowout. And I go, yeah, because that was, he told that guy to do that, you know? So, you know, when you're a manager, sometimes you can't win. And ultimately you can't go out there and throw the ball for the pitcher. You can't go out there and swing the bat for the hitter. And there are going to be times where you're going to get second guessed unfairly. And then there are going to be other times where, hey, I would have pinch hit for Cedric Mullins in the seventh inning on Sunday. I pinch hit for him in the ninth, but I would have done it in the seventh because, you know, he's really struggled. And that was a spot where they had a chance to get a couple runs. And they did have some options at that point in time, whether you're talking about in that spot, O'Hearn or Stowers or Towser. So, but you're going to find some of those. And sometimes, by the way, sometimes you'll second guess the manager. And a lot of us won't admit it, but the manager will end up being right. And what you thought they should have done ends up not being right because, you know, it just worked out a certain way. So, you know, that was a long-winded way of saying Brandon Hyde was manager of the year last year for a reason, and he deserved that. And he is not the only reason for their success by any stretch of the imagination. And he'd be the first to tell you that. But I think some of the criticism that's out there is over the top. Some of it's fair in the same way that any manager, but I think Brandon Hyde is way more of a net positive than any kind of a negative for this ball club. And the results speak for themselves when you're talking about a team that's, you know, been playing 650-ish kind of baseball this year and last year.
Here's Baltimore Luke. He is Luke Jones. You can find him out on anywhere social media is serving, from Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn and all these good places, Threads and X's and all that stuff. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have some Pac-Mans left. We're going to get some of those lucky sevens in here at some point for next week. We're going to be at Cooper's North in Timonium, Mays Chapel, I should say. I always get that neighborhood name wrong. I don't know. It's a little to the west of 83 off Timonium Road. We'll be there on Tuesday afternoon. Thursday morning, we're going to be at State Fair in Catonsville having chicken and waffles and shrimp and grits. I think I'm going to get them both. And the Orioles play the Blue Jays at 1 o'clock, so that'll be on. And Orange Crush, baby, let's go. Thursday, fire it up. Orioles out of town. They're in Tampa this weekend. My friend Pete Williams joined me from Tampa last week. If you've heard that, another great baseball conversation. Alan McCallum was on last week. We're talking to lots of people about lots of things around here. I'll be at Costas on the 20th before the Yankees game doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I got guests for that. We're at Coco's next Wednesday afternoon with Marcella. I'm looking forward to that. We'll be at Pappas on the 25th. That is the Pappas in Parkville. A lot of folks would say, that's the original Pappas. And it's a genius. Bring me over there again. And I'm looking forward to having the chicken franchise as well as a crab cake. And I'm not crab caked out, but I did go to Costas on Sunday night and I had the crab imperial, the rockfish crab imperial. So it's a rockfish imperial. Delicious. My wife had a bowl of crab soup. My wife broke her ankle in a tragic fall on Saturday morning. She's in a cast. She's miserable. She's in a lot of pain. So I took her over to Costas. I got my Costas shirt on and I told her, a lot of people in Dundalk will tell you this crab soup's like penicillin. So you got to take this. This is the first thing to getting better. So I took her over to Costa and with some crackers as well. So that tried to fix it. And feta cheese and a Greek salad. That'll fix a lot of things. Didn't fix the Orioles late in the game on Sunday. But Luke and I will be working on that. Luke's going to be chasing the Ravens around all week in Owings Mills. And then next week it is mandatory minicamp. So we'll have some Lamar thoughts and we'll have some John Harbaugh thoughts. And more than that, Luke and I took a deep dive on walks. And, I'm Venezuelan. We don't walk off the island. But we talked about the lack of walks with the Orioles. And Luke made an impassioned case that it's not so bad. So you can go find all that stuff out at BaltimorePositive.com. We got the audio vault up. We got our YouTube channel rocking. Subscribe here, like here. You know, Luke, when you talk out loud and you do thumbs up, your Zoom does like a little fun little Zoom bubble. Do you know that? You don't see it?
I did not know that.
Yeah, if you give me the thumbs up like this, there's like a whole thing that happens that makes you like cartooned. It's funny. So when people watch on YouTube, they get little Easter eggs in there, little things you don't get on AM 1570. But we hope you're finding us in any way you can. And also at Baltimore Positive now, a brand new web platform. All of our sponsors are there. We are very, very appreciative. New sponsor in Coopers and Sláinte will be there next Friday as well, doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.